What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Evolve You podcast. I'm so excited that you have joined us here. I am your host, Dr. Brian McElderry, holistic life coach, business mentor, speaker, and author. And on this podcast, we deliver you exciting episodes, not only from myself, but other influential guests we decide to bring onto this platform, hopefully to evolve you into the best version of yourself through business, health, personal development, all things life encompassing. So that being said, if you could do so for me, go ahead and leave us a rating and review down below on Apple iTunes. If you're a returning listener, if you're a new listener jumping on for the first time and you enjoy this particular episode, go ahead, maybe pause it for just a second. Pause for the cause, as I like to say. Hit us a like, a rating, review, even email us. Let us know any guests that you want to connect with, and we'll go ahead and do that at the beginning and the end. But as always, I always say, and you guys hate to hear me say this, but you hear too much from me sometimes. And I like to bring on guests that I feel like can share their area of expertise and really just their story to highlight from a different perspective of how we can all evolve, grow, and prosper during this season and after this season. So that being said, I'm going to welcome on our guest today, Mr. Nick Bolletto.
What's going on, Brian?
Did I pronounce that right?
Close enough, man. So depending on who you're asking, you can get everything. So I'm Portuguese. So yeah. My grandmother would say boleto.
Boleto.
But like the Americanized version is just boleto. I get
the country version.
The word boleto is a Spanish word too. So like if you ask somebody who speaks Spanish, they'll say boleto too. That's how it's pronounced. So close enough. Awesome. And I would have butchered your last name. So
hey, it's all good. Hey, we're all here together. So Nick, if you could just give us and the listeners, give me as well. We've talked a little bit offline, but really kind of a backbone to your story. And you can start wherever you'd like, but just tell us where you're from. And then we'll lead into kind of what you're doing now and how you're serving and helping people in the space.
Yeah, man. So I'm 25 years old. Grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I've got the best family on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And I grew up, you know, pretty regular kid. I'd like to say, you know, I excelled academically. I excelled when it came to playing sports and stuff. But I was just kind of a natural leader and really kind of excelled in a lot of different areas of my life. And then I had all of those areas of my life kind of swept out from under me. So I went from being committed to what at the time was the number one college baseball program in the entire country, in the University of South Carolina. Wow. And tore my UCL. And I went from, you know, being this incredible baseball player to I bought a glove for the other hand to learn how to throw lefty just so that I could play the game that I loved. And so it just kind of got swept out from under me. And then, you know, I kind of put myself wholeheartedly into my studies at South Carolina since I didn't have baseball anymore. And thankfully, I was in the honors college and, you know, school was something that I always loved anyways. So I studied exercise science. And then that was like everything that I devoted myself to. And then I graduated top honors from, you know, the number one program in the country for both the honors college and exercise science. And I was like, shit, I still have nothing. I don't have baseball anymore. So I kind of was stripped of all of these identities. And in that process, I realized that the only way to figure out what I was supposed to do outwardly was to go within. And so I started to go on this personal development, transformational journey to try to heal myself however possible, taking a holistic approach. And, you know, rather than pursuing a PhD, which I just thought was going to be my route, I took that money that I had and I invested it in coaching and started my own coaching business. And I was a fitness coach for I actually started in college, but I was a fitness coach full-time for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And the testimonials rolling in just started to be less and less about fitness and more about the ways that I was impacting these people's lives. So that has kind of all led me today to become this transformational men's coach. Most of my clients actually have been women, because I think you'd probably agree women are a little bit more open to this sort of work. So I attracted a lot more women, but man, like, part of the reason why you and I vibe so well is I think we're both really passionate about particularly like opening up this space to men.
Yep.
And, you know, really encouraging men to go within so that ultimately we can, you know, manifest what we want on the outside. So that's kind of a little high level overview of my story.
Wow. So you were enrolled at South Carolina. I wanted to stop you right there. You were enrolled in South Carolina on a baseball scholarship.
Yeah. So I was, you know, recruited by them. They wanted me to come pitch for them.
Yeah.
But I wasn't enrolled to play baseball per se, because I was in the honors program too.
Gotcha.
So like all my scholarships were actually scholastic, but they, you know, wanted me to come there and play.
Wow. That is so much resonating with my story and just things being stripped. And we can dive into a little bit more of your story, but I really want to highlight the transitional pieces. So it seemed like we grew up relatively similar in, you know, we didn't have to long for a lot of things. It was just, we grew up and blessed, you know, with what we needed, and we excelled in certain areas, but it feels like there was this lacking of, and there might be a listener right now that's like, well, are these two men on here that can say that, right? But there's struggles within everyone's life. And I really want to highlight, what was that point where you felt that pain or unworthiness coming up, whether it be, maybe it was in high school that there was like this epiphany moment, or maybe it wasn't until that college moment hit to where, wow, you know, my identity was baseball, but it's now focused solely on academics.
Yeah. So my epiphany moment for me was after I graduated. I got into collegiate strength and conditioning. My plan was graduate, take a year to work in collegiate strength and conditioning, figure out if I wanted to do that as a career, or if I wanted to go like the research and professor route and then pursue PhD. So I started as an intern at the University of South Carolina working with their football program. And then I actually went and I did another internship with Temple University in Philadelphia, moved back home. So it all worked out really well. But I got there and I'm working conservatively 90 hours a week, unpaid. And the mental grind that I was just putting myself through was really starting to get to me. I started having like my first full-blown anxiety attacks. I was in a pretty toxic relationship at the time. And I was dealing with the story that I had created about the fact that my whole life I'd been so high achieving and, you know, I graduated top of my class and I'm living at home with my parents making no money.
Yep.
So I've got this toxic romantic life. I'm essentially being told that I can do slave labor and I'm not worth a penny at my job. And then I'm living at home with my parents as like this super high achieving kid. And so my turning point was, it was the craziest day of my entire life. These three things all happened. I was driving to work at 3:45 in the morning and I pull over to the side of the road and I just stood on the edge of the bridge that leads you into Philadelphia. And I just like looked down over the water and I was like, this is going to be it. Like I was ready. Wow. I was ready. And like this big gust of wind came and it like kind of pushed me off the side of the bridge. And I was like, one more day, one more day. So I go to work and there's another intern who is actually the head of the exercise science program. He just likes to intern for the football team too. And he's a doctor of physical therapy and he's just a super wise guy.
Yeah.
And without me really saying anything to him, he's like, hey, I brought you this book today. And he hands me Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Great book.
And I was like, all right, like, I don't really take book recommendations, but cool. And I start reading this book, and he's talking about like finding your purpose and whether or not you can find purpose in your suffering. And I'm like open to that idea because I'm suffering big time.
Yeah.
And then driving home that day, it's pouring rain. I'm trying to merge onto the interstate. And as I do so, all of the traffic in front of me starts to break. So I break. The person behind me is this like 16-year-old kid who just got his license that day. And he just couldn't get on his brakes quick enough. Rams into me, totals my car. The airbags didn't go off. And I get out of the car completely unscathed. And I'm like, oh my God, this has been the craziest day of my entire life. Like,
this is all in one day.
This is all in one day. I'm like, I'm meant to be alive.
Yes.
And I got to figure out why. So that was the turning point. Was I was in this period of time where, you know, I was ready to be done. And God, the universe, whatever you believe in, was telling me like, no, you're not. You gotta stick around, figure this out.
Wow. I appreciate you sharing that. And I love that my guests are willing. And that's why I bring on specific guests, because we can't evolve and we can't grow without opening up the pain. And this is a safe space, especially for anyone that's listening, obviously, for you to really unlayer and bring back those layers and understand where your story stems from. So in that moment, we have a shift and a transitional moment where you're now reading this book and you're now having this new discovery. And where did that moment come where you took an actionable step? What was the next step after that?
I mean, I think it was the next day, really. I showed up to work with just a totally different attitude.
Yeah.
Like I was showing up and I was like, rather than making this experience about me, because as hard as it is, like, I mean, my days are awful, really.
Mm-hmm.
But how can I make this about these student athletes?
Wow.
How can I go out of my way to try to help somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to see immediate results. Like this, the players are coming in for extra work just to have conversations with me. You know, I'm starting to get a lot of respect from the players. And I'm like, man, like, I don't know if strength and conditioning is the avenue for me, but I know that I'm really good at this.
Yeah.
And so when my time with that internship was done, I decided, you know, I'm going to go online. I'm going to start an online coaching business because I'm an expert when it comes to exercise science.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to get this coaching thing down.
Yeah.
And basically what happened was I got accepted into both of my dream schools for a PhD program. And the day I got the acceptance was the day I also got accepted into what ended up being my first coaching program to hire a mentor. And I had about $6,000 in the bank, which is what the investment was.
Yep.
And $6,000 was like living expenses. So it was like, all right, you can choose one or the other. So I went all in, made the investment and started my coaching business. That
I love
was really
it.
Kind of the shift.
I love it. That moment right there reminded me of a quote in the book. And I think it goes something along the lines of, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we're challenged to change someone else's or challenged to change others. So during this time, if you're listening right now, obviously you're wondering how there's a lot of me going on. There's a lot of, well, I need to make sure I'm good. And yeah, you do. But at the end of the day, when you're challenged with any situation, that should be a reverting thing in your mind to say, well, what can I give to others during this time? Because the universe and God, like you said, if you're a believer, it's going to come back to you in some sign, in some way, in a moment where you're not even going to be looking for it. So that's absolutely amazing. We're in challenging times, right, Nick?
Yeah, we are.
We're in challenging times, but it's all your perspective. And can you give us your perspective on Before we dive into your coaching, I really wanted to, I think this is a prime opportunity as a Black male, as a Caucasian white male, as you would be perceived, even though you have many different things in your blood. What have you noticed during this time? Because I've seen you're very much of a supporter of the Breonna Taylor movement, Black Lives Matter movement. And, you know, what has that brought about from your experience growing up and maybe even your sphere of influence? And what have you seen? And you can talk as authentically as you'd like.
Yeah, so I'll be super open about this.
Yeah.
It's been very eye-opening for me. So my, you know, suburbia upbringing, I had class my entire high school career. I shared a class with one Black person ever. There was two Black kids on the basketball team with me that, you know, I was friends with.
Yeah.
But other than that, I didn't even see Black people.
Yeah.
And so I think in some ways I was fortunate in that I wasn't fed a lot of the negative biases that a lot of other kids, a lot of other white kids are fed.
Yeah.
Because there just wasn't Black people where I lived.
Yeah.
And then in other ways, I got to college and I had three Black professors my first semester, and that was super eye-opening.
Yeah.
And you know, like my best friend ended up being a Black kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that I started ahead of a lot of other white people. And as far as like, I didn't have to necessarily like undo a lot of negative biases. But for me, when this all was, when this was pushed in front of my face and I could no longer, you know, ignore it.
Yeah.
It's like an obvious thing. Like it's just human rights.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the other thing that I did was I got proactive about it. So I think June 3rd, Trudy LeBron led the, led a masterclass on like how to serve and lead for white coaches.
Yep.
And as soon as I found out about it, I enrolled and I showed up and I started doing what I could.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's kind of what it's been for me. And I made a video, an IGTV video about this, but, you know, when COVID hit, I was the coach that was like, you know, COVID didn't change your financial situation per se. It simply exposed what was already underlying there for you, what already wasn't working.
Exactly.
And so for me, with everything that's going on with Black Lives Matter, it just exposed what was already not working for me in regards to my anti-racism work. And so I would be a complete hypocrite if I wasn't willing to say, like, you know what? I haven't been good enough. I'm going to start doing the work and be better.
Yeah. So
that was kind of my full story.
Yeah, no, I love that because I can see that from you. And there's a difference between what I've seen in the coaching space, and there's been a huge transitional moment as well to exposing a lot. And everyone can react in whatever way they want to react. But what I've seen is those that are willing to simply say, hey, I'm going to open my arms up and I'm going to acknowledge what I do know, what I can contribute, and what I don't know. And I think that as a leader in its own right is the way to go in whatever regard. And I just want to acknowledge you for that, because I have seen that from you and other coaches that are simply saying, hey, I'm just open to whatever comes my way. And it's just exposing what I do not have or what I did not learn or what I did not experience in my lifetime. So there were different experiences that people may have had growing up. And I do believe that racism and racial injustice is taught. So your experience, you said that, well, I was only exposed to a small subgroup of the Black culture, and that I experienced was okay. You know, I had one guy in my class, seemed like he was a good guy. Had two guys on the basketball team, seemed like they were good guys. What I've seen is that people that were not exposed, they're portrayed an image of what that may be, or they're either taught that image. You know, I've ran into white friends of mine that had the same experience, and they said, well, only thing I saw was what was on TV. And it's the rappers, just the basketball players. They're dressing a certain way. They're speaking a certain way. And when they come into contact with someone that's very intellectual, in whatever way they show intellect, it surprises them, you know? So where do you think that stems from? Do you think that's an excuse? Do you think that those people are incorrect? What do you think that that person, if they're listening right now, is saying, hey, I have the same experience as Nick. I was taught differently. I'm trying to change my ways, but I just have this certain one belief.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I've been talking about and thinking about is that, especially if you're in the similar space that we're in, and our ultimate goal is to promote love,
yep,
and acceptance. You can't love and accept anyone and love and accept yourself if it's not you're loving and accepting everyone. So if you have discriminatory beliefs or covert actions, microaggressions, then there's something to be healed within you. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the place to start.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, like, we in the long term want to be able to start to, you know, be anti-racist and taking different action, being more inclusive and doing things for racial equity. But if you're not there yet, just start with yourself. Because yeah, I guarantee that if that's your relationship to people who just look different than you, then your relationship to yourself is probably also a place where you struggle and have challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. It's as I shift into really talking about the Renaissance man and what that truly means from all of us men coming together, my last posing kind of thought would be, I've seen a lack of authenticity or transparency or acknowledgement from my white males, specifically in the coaching space. There's a select few that I believe are doing what they can. And that's really rubbed me the wrong way, because what we have seen is that there is really coming from a hierarchy of white male privilege per se. Right. So even in our modern era, from that not being acknowledged still from very few, because women, like we said before, are all open to conversing about all things all the time, very emotionally charged, very emotionally connected. As we move into what we believe as a Renaissance man, or how you can be a better man, is there anything that you would say to your fellow kind of white males, or even in the coaching space, or I would just pose as leaders? And it could be maybe what you just said. I think that resonates the same. But I just want to kind of pose that specifically, because I think that's something that we may have more listeners on that might be from that perspective.
Yeah, I think one of the underlying beliefs for white males to continue to uphold white male privilege is that it keeps us ahead. And the truth of the matter is that we all win when we all win. Mm-hmm. So my feed 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, like, it was very white, I'll be honest. and I've diversified it a lot in the last 8 weeks. And I've learned so much. I've gotten so much value. Like, you know, I don't know if you use TikTok or not. I use TikTok as just a way to, like, get some humor into my life and chill out. Like, I follow almost all black creators on there. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So we all win when we all win, right? Yeah. And, you know, if it wasn't for me, like, being willing to throw up my arms and say, you know, like, I'm not where I need to be and I'm going to do the work, like, I wouldn't have this opportunity to be on the podcast with you right now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have had the opportunity to be hired. I just got hired to be the mindset coach for CE Owned, mm-hmm. which is an all women pretty much group. One of the founders is a brown woman,
yeah.
you know? So like, I mean, we all win when we all win. And like, I'm winning more because I've tried to do the work.
Yeah.
And like, I'm definitely not winning any less. Yeah. So if you believe that, hey, like, you know, I got to keep myself ahead by repressing and oppressing these voices that aren't, you know, they don't look like mine. Like, you're actually just holding yourself back.
That's well said. And I will say that I love that you said that we all must win, but I will say that as well, that it's hard for all of us to win on the same playing field until we revert back to the stem root of equality and what that truly means and how do we get to that space. And that's a whole nother legislative issue, which we're all working through now, is how do we go through these phases of legislation, economic equality, all these different things, which we're getting to eventually. So let's go into your area of expertise right now, which is transformational coaching, and how you're doing that specifically, trying to get more men in. I love the book that you referenced, because if you're a man right now, even if you're a woman and want to kind of search into how to maybe help the men in your life, man's search for meaning, there's some amazing concepts in there. Maybe let's start there. What have you learned maybe from that book for yourself that maybe other men might need to hear during this time? And if you're a woman listening, you could translate this and bring your men onto this podcast and let them listen. Right?
So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the two main takeaways from Man's Search for Meaning for me are, first and foremost, like, there's nothing that feels better, is more powerful, is more than living out your purpose and bringing good works to the world. Which he says is the primary reason for, like, the primary meaning for life. And then really what was actually the more powerful takeaway for me at the time that I first read the book, and this may hit home for a lot of people, particularly right now as we're navigating some challenging times for people, is that there's meaning to be found in your suffering as well. And so if you're going through a challenging stage right now, why? Like, and can you find what this challenging stage is preparing you for? You know,
yep.
Even just looking at the last like 8 weeks for me, you know, I had like 6 weeks, very challenging times for me. I felt like I couldn't even show up on social media and I wasn't showing up for my clients. And yeah. Then the last 2 weeks, like, I've been winning. But yeah. I realized that if I didn't go through those really hard times and I didn't at least show up a little bit for myself, if for nothing else, then I don't create the wins. Yeah. So if you're going through your own personal hell, or, you know, in terms of man's search for meaning, your own personal Holocaust, if you're there, you know, can you find meaning for it? Because like the author, Viktor Frankl, he says, like, the people who had a reason to get through the Holocaust survived the Holocaust. Mm. And the people who didn't, they were the ones that, you know, they threw themselves into the electric fence.
Yeah.
And they stopped eating, they stopped sleeping, they stopped taking care of themselves.
Yeah.
So if you're in the struggle, why? Why are you there? Is it preparing you for something? Figure that out.
Yeah, that's a great correlation. And you can relate that to any type of suffering over centuries of time. And the people that had meaning were always the one that prospered, or the ones that led in by a certain manner. This might be just kind of off tangent for a second, but I kind of grew up for some reason watching like jail documentaries. And it was more so for the curiosity. And I don't know if any listeners are like, me too, but it was more so for the curiosity of a mindset of how do you thrive in that type of like in uncomfortable situations. It wasn't like I was interested in like jail. It was like, how in the world do you survive in a mind frame of that when you have, you know, various groups of people in there that didn't do something or did something dramatic. And, you know, it's just, it was intriguing to me. So yeah, I think that can correlate to anything that you're going through suffering wise. You mentioned some laws, and I looked into your social, and I love that you have been posting these laws of a Renaissance man. And give you some context, I went to Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia, and our president really firmly believed in developing the best Renaissance man or the modern man. And we had five different qualities of what that stood for. And you stated that there's laws of forgiveness, reciprocity, resistance, and prosperity, from what I've gathered. And can you speak about those and maybe where those came from or how those relate to developing maybe a modern Renaissance man or a best leader?
Yeah, so the Renaissance man method, the idea came because as a 25-year-old, I sometimes feel like I'm not the right age. And yep. I would love to see a rebirth of men. Yeah, exactly. So I would truly love to see a rebirth, which, you know, obviously is what Renaissance mean. And then, you know, what my goal always has been for myself and what my clients usually are looking for as well is they want to become a Renaissance man. And not only are they succeeding in their careers, but they're also, you know, finding fulfilling romantic relationships. They're also family men. Like, you know, I think that a lot of us, we grew up with fathers particularly who they worked their 50 hours a week and they weren't really there for us in the way that we needed them to be, especially as men.
Yep.
And I think that just develops this like really, really kind of horrible cycle where, you know, you get to a certain age and you're no longer chasing the next big goal, right, from your career and your income. And you're left with like, well, what's going to be the thing that continues to stimulate me? And if it's not your family, if it's not the relationship that you have with yourself and hobbies and things that you found throughout your life, then it ends up being addictions. Yep. And it ends up being gambling. It ends up being video games and adultery. And ultimately, you know, my goal, my big goal, what I'm using the Renaissance man to kind of do is I want to save men from that life. I want to help men create like stable family homes that are prosperous, but that are also full of love.
Yeah.
And that starts with your own transformational journey. And so these laws are to help govern that process. So, you know, the law of forgiveness, a lot of men, I mean, we even have trouble saying sorry to each other.
Yep.
Right. But for us to forgive ourselves, forget about it. Reciprocation. Exactly. Reciprocation. And this is, I mean, for my white men out there, holy, we think that we are so entitled to everything. We're so entitled to everything and we don't want to give anything. And then vice versa with reciprocation. I think that I see this actually more with my clients than the other way around is they want to give and give and give because they believe that their value is based on what they do. And they're not actually open to receivership because that's, you know, the feminine, right? So how do we get men to tap into their feminine so that they can stand in receivership?
Yep.
So all of these laws are really to govern that process of self-transformation. And a lot of it, like I kind of mentioned, is helping men tap into their feminine. And I think that finding that balance is ultimately what allows us to create that long-term vision of these happy homes. You know, like I'm an aspiring family man. And I want to help other men, you know, create those families. Yeah. So that's what the Renaissance man is all about.
That's really good. and drop the mic on that one for just a second, because it was so beautifully said, man. And I give credit where it's due, because this is a passion of mine, and subconsciously and consciously, I try to get our men to step up. And that does not mean just as a provider and protector, but I love that you mentioned tapping into the feminine. You know, even my dad, I love that you mentioned that, how we were mentored and brought up in, as a millennial, we are still brought up by a certain generation to where that was the stimulus, that was the goal, that was the only purpose that a man thought he had, which was simply to provide and protect and to love in a certain manner that didn't show weakness. And weakness could be defined as, hey, I don't cry. Hey, I barely maybe hug, I barely touch. I talk very firmly to my son, whatever it might be. And I congratulate him, but I continuously push him to be the best man. So what is a man? How would you define a man in your own right of what that maybe looks like today? Because it's different now, as we've seen a lot of exposure and suppression by a lot of men going into hiding because they don't know how to support anymore. They don't know how to serve out of this feminine energy these days.
Right. Yeah. So you asked the question on your IG story yesterday, asking what you thought a leader was in one word. And my response was authentic. Mm. And I think that authenticity for men is really what it's all about. So that looks like knowing who you are, which I think requires this deep personal work, and then living it. And so I think a lot of men, we focus on just going out, we focus on the doing, but we don't figure out who we are first. So we end up living these lives that aren't authentic lives. And the reason that, like, I love you so much is you are harmony and authenticity to a T, man. Like, you do everything in your life the exact same. Like, you approach, like, we connected because of, like, golf, your golf game.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, you approach golf the same way you approach business, same way you approach your relationship. And across the board, it's just consistent and authentic. And, like, so, you know, I think that as much as this has been all about me, like, I think that you are the ideal, the standard for what a man can and should be.
I appreciate that, man. I love that. And I got that translation from everyone that put leader, what they put as a leader in their own right. And I wanted them to acknowledge that. And the fact that you said that, I think that's the key word nowadays. And there's a difference between a key word and a hot word, because people take that and run with it. But do they embody it to what it truly means? Like, what does it mean to be conscious? What does it mean to be authentic? What does it mean to be transparent? What does it mean to be empathetic? All these different words now are very hard for men to embody, because they're like, that sounds soft. Like, I can't do that. What's the first step maybe that a man that is listening right now, or even my women, hopefully you are getting value out of this as well. Where can men start typically? Maybe these laws govern, obviously, like you said, a stepwise process. But where can they start with beginning to open up themselves to this new way of leading?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first step in the Renaissance Man Method is revelation, which is essentially just conscious awareness. So in order for us to eventually bring our purpose to the world and start to do the things, like I said, we need to first know who we are. Yeah. And who we are lays at our subconscious and unconscious level, with our beliefs, our survival patterns, our subconscious emotions. And so how can you bring that to the conscious level of awareness so that you can begin to make some changes? So the places that I always suggest people to start, the two things that expose people more than anything else, is your relationship to wealth, money, and finances, and your romantic relationships.
That's good.
So I would start with those two areas and ask yourself, well, what are my beliefs about money? What does money say about me? Do I want a lot of money? Do I think only bad people have a lot of money? Do I think it's selfish to want a lot of money? And what am I like in a romantic relationship? Am I a very selfish lover, or am I overly selfless? Am I afraid to set boundaries? And what does all of that kind of say about yourself? And you'll see a lot of overlap between those two areas.
I agree.
And those will kind of begin to point you in the direction of some of the work that you get to do. So that's what my first recommendation would be.
Wow, that's good. I can resonate fully with that, is that I personally am a very deep lover. I care for people so much. I'm an Enneagram 2 and a little bit of a 3. So I'm a high achiever of success and a 3, but really care for people as of a 2 and really give and give and give. So I would say, yeah, as people would say, money is the root of all evil per se. When most divorces and disruptions in relationships and marriages and things of that sort is all typically rooted on individuals' beliefs, but specifically their beliefs around money and how they're loving each other. So it's what people avoid the most, but it's what they need to focus on the most as well, specifically our men, because I think there's still that chivalry that's not dead.
Yeah.
Mentality. And I would say I serve out of that a little bit, that, you know, I do believe as a man, we should guide and we should lead, but we're also willing to be listeners from different perspectives. But I do believe a lot of women these days do expect a man to lead in some capacity, or to be an authentic leader and listen and take in consideration of all perspectives of the relationship or the family and move in the direction that they need to move. So I think we're all trying to do that the best way possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's so spot on. I'm a little bit pissed because I really thought you were an Enneagram 3. I was so close.
Yeah. It got me right at a 2 and then kind of split me into a 3. So I'm right in there. That 3 can take over sometimes. If you've probably seen, like, I'm competitive from that sports background and very high achiever. But I do kind of have that emotional attachment as well in the 2.
Gotcha.
So what is yours?
I'm a 4.
4?
Yeah. And I think I'm very balanced between Wayne 5 and Wayne 3.
Yeah.
I think I'm Wayne 5, but then, like, other people who know me think that I'm Wayne 3 more. So well, I'm definitely a 4.
Yeah.
my score is not even close. It's like 4. You know, I took like the Ready Enneagram Institute's test, and it was like 28 for 4. And then my next highest was like 18 or something like that. So.
Yeah. I love it. So what, as we wrap up here, I always leave my guests with lasting words, and also allow them to kind of give them platform to promote themselves a little bit. And I'll ask 2 questions typically. Number 1, how are you evolving during this time? What are you working on? How are you growing? Maybe some revelations that you've had during this season, or a teaching point that you want to leave with somebody. And let people know where they can find you.
Yeah. So my biggest piece of advice would be to examine any stories that you're creating that are empowering you to continue to play the victim. We're going through a time that is super challenging on all of us. You know, it could be the simple challenge of, like, I'm a gym rat and I can't go to the gym anymore. And it can be the very real challenge of you being furloughed, right? And so what are you doing about it? Are you allowing yourself to continue to believe that other people are in control? Are you not taking 100% responsibility for your results? Are you continuing to choose to be a victim? Or, you know, as we talked about, is there something in this suffering, in this challenging phase that you're going through, that's preparing you for something bigger? That would be my number 1 piece of advice for somebody to start. That's been where I've been kind of living at. You know, this period of time has been challenging for me. And to be honest, I let it kick my ass for a little bit.
I think we all had that period.
No, like, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, getting myself back on the horse and understanding, you know, reconnecting with my purpose. There's people to serve, there's people to help, and it starts with me. So that would be my main takeaway from this period of time. And as far as where you can find and connect with me, I'm on pretty much all social media platforms. Facebook and Instagram are probably the two best places. I've got a lot going on. So we talked about the Renaissance Man Method, which is my transformational men's program. I won the One Coaching Program. I'm also the senior coach at the Conscious Coach Experience with Jacob Kaufman, which is a business coaching and life coaching program for entrepreneurs at that six-figure mark, looking to get to multiple six and even seven figures. And then I'm also the mindset mentor for CE-Owned, which is another business coaching program primarily targeted towards women, 90 days. And some of these women are getting crazy results already. I've seen people 3 weeks into the program already hitting over 10K a month. So
yeah,
super excited to be a part of all of that.
Love it. I absolutely love it. So as we wrap up here, I just want to thank you, Nick, for coming on and just sharing very transparent information and embodying what it means to be authentic, as you said, what men need to start with. And this is a start for anyone that's listening. If we decide to share this, obviously we'll have video footage as well. If we decide to share this as well, if you're watching, thank you guys so much for just jumping on, spending a little bit of time with us. So connect with Nick down below in the show notes. All of his information will be down there. And just check him out. Obviously, I wouldn't bring anyone on here that I didn't feel like was worthy of being this authentic leader and being somebody that someone could learn from. So that being said, I'm going to leave you with this quote, and it actually comes from the book, Man's Search for Meaning, which is those who have a why to live can bear with almost any how. So if you can find that why, any way you can find a way out, the actual stepwise processes, the how to get it done, it will come. But you must search for that why first. So thank you guys so much for listening to the Evolve You podcast, this particular episode. Please go ahead and rate and review. Give us some feedback. Email us, connect with Nick down below, and we'll see you in the next episode.